Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Tech Whispers. I'm your host, Dan Roberts, and today I'm honored to feature an extraordinary leader who's been blazing trails and inspiring countless others throughout her career. This, of course, is Amy Brady, the Chief Information Officer at KeyBank, where she leads the company's technology, operations, and services organizations. Amy is the epitome of a multifaceted leader, wearing a remarkable array of different hats at KeyBank, from overseeing technology and operations to leading transformational digital journeys and shaping a culture of continuous learning. Amy's influence extends beyond her organization. She's making her mark across the industry, across the community. She's on the boards of Playhouse Square, which we'll talk about, DuPont, world-class company, and she's always championing causes that uplift women in tech. We'll dive today into Amy's incredible journey, uncovering her leadership philosophies, those career-defining moments, and those superpowers that make her so special and impactful in so many ways. And you know, along the way, we're going to unpack her story through the lens of mystery questioners, friends and colleagues who have known Amy in different parts of her life and will really help me unpack her story. So, Amy, welcome. So good to have you here. Been looking forward to this day very much. And I want to start off by having you unpack all those different hats you wear at KeyBank.
Well, first off, Dan, thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be included in your series here. So I look forward to this. So yeah, my responsibilities at KeyBank are pretty vast, which I love. I do have the responsibility for all of technology. So front to back, from our client interaction acting technologies to all the technologies that our employees use to the infrastructure that runs all of that. In addition, I'm responsible for our back office operations. So think in a financial institution, loan servicing, consumer and commercial loan servicing, or all of our payment processing, movement of money, so wires, ACH, you know, all of that back office. So once a client engages with Key, my teams make sure that their accounts are serviced and are operational each and every day. I'm responsible for our contact center. So our contact center servicing for all of our clients, which a lot of people say, well, why is that in your org? But if you think about tech and servicing, clients that are on their mobile today, from mobile, if they have a question, it's a seamless transfer right into contact center. So we link that and are able to continue to deliver great service for all of our clients across multiple segments. In addition, I have the Chief Data and Analytics Officer as a part of my organization, which I'm sure we're going to talk about more as we talk about digital. And I just have this firm belief that you can't have really impressive digital experiences if you don't have them powered by data and analytics. So that's the fuel that runs our company, if you will. Enterprise security services, a critical component of my organization. And that's everything from cyber and information security to physical security to fraud operations to anti-money laundering operations. So really important heartbeat of the company to keep our clients secure and our information secure here at Key. I have an intelligent automation center of excellence that's a part of my organization. So think RPA, AI, Gen AI, but all of those tools and techniques to make our processes and more efficient and effective for our employees and our clients, and a team that really helps re-engineer those capabilities for our enterprise. I have an enterprise risk group that supports across all lines of business. And then to add just a little fun to everything, I'm responsible for our corporate real estate portfolio. So where our people come to work every day and the facilities that we operate in across the country.
Amy, there are like five times I thought you were done, but that was just a comma. And you just do it so calm and kind of superhumanish, really. It's as you're going through that and just the impact on clients, you know, that external outside in, the inside out impacts, just so impressive. And so, but here's a cool thing. The people who know you well, not surprised about that remit. And so I want to pull in someone who knows you really well. They've known you for a long time. And I want to hear from him what he thinks about Amy, and it'll make all this make more sense. So listen in.
When I first met Amy, I was struck by her willingness to challenge convention, her creativity, her organizational skills, and a shared perspective around customer-centered innovation, and as well a sense of positivity and optimism and warmth and humor. And in the multiple roles that she had when we worked together, it also became clear to me that she could deliver at very large scale.
I'm going to just pause there for a second because there's more, okay? And before I get to the question, I want you to tell us who that is and what kind of impact he had on your career.
Yeah, I recognize the voice right away. You'll never forget. It was Mark Gordon. And Mark had an incredible impact on my career. He came to Bank of America at a time where I was running R&D for the company. And he came in as the consumer CIO. It was his first foray into financial services, although he was a very experienced CIO. And he asked me to come work for him. And I said, sure, I'll do it, Mark. Give it 2 years. I'll work in tech and then go back to the business. And during that, there were two things that happened during that 2 years. One, Mark said to me, do you ever want to be a CIO? And I said, absolutely not. And I remember going home and thinking, but wait a second. He said, you could be a CIO. And he planted a seed that it had never been in my career trajectory to even think about that role because I did not think I was qualified for the role. So I give Mark a lot of credit because he, as a coach and a mentor, helped me see something in myself that I couldn't see. And I will be forever grateful to him for that. On top of that, he challenged me to really learn more and more about the technology. And what I learned during that time was technology was the business. It was financial services, and it was changing financial services. And I wanted to be a part of creating that change. And so from his inspiration and allowing me to take on some bigger roles and tough challenges for him and help him transform the technology organization that he had inherited, that launched my tech career.
Amazing. Amazing. Mark, big shout out to you and thank you for the help. And I know you've done this for a lot of people yourself, Amy, you know, in terms of helping others see that in themselves. And so let's let Mark finish his question. And I can't wait for you to respond to his really great question. So listen in.
But as we worked even more closely together, what struck me as an innate strength was that positivity, that optimism, that warmth and humor. And in the context of work, these innate strengths really enabled her to attract great people. They wanted to be part of her team. She inspired them to want to do amazing things. She unleashed them. They were excited about and proud of the work that they did. They felt seen. They felt they belonged. They wanted to perform, and they wanted Amy to be proud of them. Amy, do you consider this one of your superpowers? And if so, how did it develop? And what advice would you offer others aspiring to roles like yours?
Wow, that's a great question. And one, I'm not sure I have superpowers, so I thank Mark for saying that I do. So that's humbling.
And not to cut you off, Amy, but one of the hallmarks of all the great leaders like you is humility. So I'm going to just kind of insert that right now. But anyways, I'm going to go with Mark's answer on this one.
Well, you know, I think, how do you develop that skill? I think you develop the skill by one, genuinely having an interest in seeing other people achieve their fullest potential and understanding that their fullest potential is not the same as yours. And I credit Mark for that too. Sometimes, right? It's challenging people to see things in themselves, setting that lofty goal, setting that aspiration for a team that they just don't think they can achieve. But being there as their leader, their coach, their cheerleader, to pick people up when they fall, but even more importantly, cheer them on as they're making progress. Because I truly believe that, you know, when you achieve more, you want to achieve more. People come to work wanting to do their very best. And as leaders, if we can create that environment for people to feel confident and in their ability and let them shine, I think that's how you create tremendous teams. And I have found that to be a fun challenge, right? Is to really bring out the best in each individual. I think to do that, you know, if you're wanting to learn how to develop that skill, I think you have to be self-aware enough to know that people will know things that you don't know, and to be confident in yourself with that. So, you know, aspiring others may be admitting to them that you don't know something they know. So that inspires them to teach you and to teach the rest of the team and to, you know, bring their very best, because you're not competing with them. We're working together and establishing those common goals and aspirations, I think, are inspirational to most human beings, right?
No, I love that. And Amy, I'm thinking of all the people right now that have taken on new roles recently. You know, they've become a first-time manager. They've taken that leap to director or vice president. And, you know, you've got a great Amyism on how to think about or how to approach climbing the ladder. I'd love to have you kind of share that and help them think about being successful in that next level.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I don't think there's ever been a role I've taken in my career, and it's been a long career, that I was 100% ready for, including the one I have today. And I've been in this role now for a while, and I'm still not 100% ready for this role. And what I mean by that is, acknowledge when you go into a new role, it's okay to acknowledge to yourself, hey, there's a certain percentage of this role that I don't quite know, and I'm going to have to learn. And open your mind to how you learn those things. It might be the people around you. It might be some things you have to learn externally, whatever that might be. But taking that step to say, you know what, I don't have this. And by the way, I truly believe this. If you go into a role that you feel you're 100% prepared for, it's probably not the right next role for you, because it's not going to stretch you to learn any new skills or to develop your leadership further, or whatever it is that you're trying to personally aspire to. The second thing, and I just mentioned this, is I come to work every day knowing that what got me to this position, let's say 5 years ago, is not what's going to make me successful today. And it certainly won't make me successful 5 years from now. And I try to approach every day that way, because then you're challenging yourself to say, wait, am I doing this because I've always done it that way? Well, that may not meet today's modern expectations from either our clients, or technologies may have changed, or the market may have changed, or whatever's going on. We all know everything is constantly changing. So to think that we don't need to change and grow, I think that's a leadership gap in some folks. Right? That you have to acknowledge, you have to keep learning. And I think the number one leadership quality of a successful leader is that learning agility, and is the ability, you said it, the ability to be humble enough to say what you don't know, but confident enough to bring to the role your set of skills. You're there for a purpose. Someone gave you that next role for a purpose. So bring your skills, but then learn from those around you, maybe the gaps that you have for that next assignment.
I mean, that's the playbook right there to be future ready. And the future is going so fast, right? That no one knows what that's going to be, right? But if you're in that learning mode, you'll always prepare yourself. And, you know, that's how people get recognized as things like, I don't know, something like 25 most powerful women in banking. Let's just pick that as an example. You actually will recognize that's a big deal, Amy. I mean, it's mostly CEOs, presidents, the biggest banks in the country. Only a couple other CIOs were recognized in this list: Lori Beer and Tracy Cairns, who you know. But what makes that so special? I mean, that's really, really amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think there are a couple things that make it special. One, if you think of the role, I think it is wonderful that the organization started to recognize and the industry started to recognize the importance of the CIO role. Because to your point, for the longest time, the women who were on that list all had, CEO or head of a certain business unit in their title, a P&L unit in their title. It is nice to see the acknowledgement of the importance and criticality of these technology roles in the industry. So that's number one. Number two, I'm sure like every other woman on that top 25 list, we represent thousands and thousands of talented women in our industry. We just happen to be chosen to represent that group, and I hope inspire others to see all of the different roles that they can do in their career. But irrespective, there are some incredibly talented women in our industry. And I always have said, I hope that we can stop having that top 25 women in banking. We're not quite there yet. We don't have the equity at all levels and in all disciplines and across all of the parts of the industry that we'd like. So I feel a real responsibility being on that list to make sure that I do what other women did for me and quite frankly, what other men and mentors did for me along the way of my career, that I do that for others as they look to their next 25 years in financial services.
Yeah, you are definitely inspiring people. And I hadn't thought about the responsibility part of it, you know, so I appreciate you highlighting that. And, you know, Amy, Mark had asked a great question earlier, and I want to have an extension to that with another mystery questioner. And I'm thinking about your responsibility for the careers of 5,000 colleagues across those, I don't know, 10 different functions that you mentioned earlier. So listen to this next question and tell us who this is. And I think you're going to love the question.
One great leadership quality is to show empathy for your team. I've noticed that you smile while talking to your audience at your town halls. When did you develop this skill, and did you feel it creates followership?
It sounds like Keith Silvestri.
You can't miss that voice, right? Who is Keith?
So Keith is one of my direct reports. He's our CTO of the company. He has a really challenging job. And it's the irony of him saying that I smile a lot, he brings a positivity to his role that is terrific, because in that role, there's always something that is a challenge every day, much like mine. But, you know, I do think I have like a top 10 list of things I've learned over my career. And one of the top 10, I always end with this, is to make it fun, right? We spend a lot of time at work, and sometimes it's hard. Like there are days where it's hard and you're solving tough problems or something breaks or there's a fraud crisis or the threat actor, whatever it might be that we're dealing with. And so I think as a leader, demonstrating it's okay to have fun while you're doing this work is really important. I had a very early mentor in my career. I'm talking when I was in my early 20s, said to me, "Remember, Amy, we work so we can have a life. We don't live to work." Now, I haven't always been balanced about that throughout my career, and my family would probably say that. But I do try to smile. I do try to bring empathy to the role, to really know the audience I'm talking to, and deliver messages that even if they're hard, you can deliver it in a way that can inspire and hopefully get the audience, the intended audience, to trust and, you know, want to come to work the next day to give it 110% again.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that, Keith. And, you know, it makes me think of one of the big differentiators of the great leaders are just having that ability to speak well publicly, you know, be on stage, that person that was like, gosh, I want to be like that someday. You have a couple of Amy's tips and tricks for, you know, how you become a great public speaker?
Well, again, thank you for saying that I am. But I would say, first and foremost, you have to know your audience, right? Know your audience, know who you're talking to, and try to be relatable to your audience. Now, for me, in a town hall, I've got a very diverse workforce. So I really am intentional, and I try in those town halls as an example to make sure that my messages, not every single one of them will resonate with every single person, but that something in that content will resonate with every single person. So I think content is important, knowing your audience, and then being your authentic self. I think people who struggle with speaking in front of groups oftentimes are trying to be somebody that they're not. And you don't have to speak like me to be effective or get up in front of a group and act like I do to be effective. You have to be you. And I think once you do that, you're a bit calmer in your approach. If it is not an innate skill of yours, work at it, practice. Someone once told me, stand in front of a mirror and deliver it. And as crazy as that is, I learned that back when I was a voice major in college and I had to deliver a song with emotion and I didn't know how to do it. And my voice instructor said to me, stand in front of a mirror and deliver the song. And that was really hard. But by doing that, you said, wait a second, is that what I want others to see and feel from me? And I think some of that just takes repetition and practice. And the last tip I would say is have someone you trust give you immediate feedback. If this is a skill you're growing, pick a peer mentor and say, hey, Dan, next time you see me present at this small group, give me immediate feedback. Have someone you trust help you along the way.
Those are just golden tips. And, you know, people like yourself, you've got big jobs. Your folks don't have a lot of access to you day to day, most likely, right? And so to be able to see you, to be able to get to know you in that way, you know, that's pretty special. You know, that's pretty cool. I appreciate those tips. And so another mystery question for you from, I think you're going to recognize this voice right away. And let's just check it out. This is another fun one.
Hey, Amy, you've spent close to 13 years at Key, over 8 years at Bank of America, and now you've been on DuPont's board for 5 years. Is there one or two mentors that have been instrumental in your career and have helped guide you in your career? What is one piece of advice that they gave you that you have leveraged in helping you navigate the complexities of leading a large technology and operations team?
That was Mike Onders.
Indeed.
Also another voice I recognize very well and one of my leadership team. Great engineer, great. I have a huge respect for Mike and his technology acumen. He's one of the best leaders I've worked with from a technology perspective. Smart, challenges me to be better all the time. But I will say he tried to make me younger there because he said I was only at Bank of America for 8 years and I was there for 25 years. So I have a little bit more experience than the 20 some years he was staying. So I'm feeling older all of a sudden. I have had the privilege of having some great mentors and sponsors along the way in my career. And you heard one of them earlier in the broadcast. There's another gentleman that I still will reach out to from time to time. And I worked with him over 25 years ago, Milton Jones. He also was at Bank of America. He was a CFO. Our background couldn't be more different. Our skill sets were very different. And I think that's one piece of advice I would give people is seek out mentors that don't look like you, don't have the same experiences as you, and are the type of people that are willing to tell you the things you don't want to hear. Milton was always willing to come back and say, you know, Amy, you really need to work on X, Y, or Z. And everybody can tell you how great you are, but the really good mentors will give you the feedback about the areas that you need to work on. And we all have a list. I still have a long list of things that I work on every day and every year and say I'm going to grow personally. So having those mentors are important. I would also say find mentors that see you in different environments, right? So I do have a mentor on the DuPont board that I will use to say, okay, how am I doing as a board member? Because that's a new role for me or a relatively new role for me. I've presented to boards, but I've never been on a for-profit board. And now, having done it for 5 years in an industry that was very new to me, having someone who will pull you aside and say, okay, you're asking the right questions, get your voice in the room, you know, giving you that inspiration. So I think having a knowing that different mentors can come at different times in your career is also really, I think, really helpful.
Yeah, I hope we have time to talk more about your board work here in a few minutes. And just want to thank Mike again for joining us. He was really excited about this. Both he and Keith, it was interesting. I talked to them both, and they talked about that fun factor. You know, like we work hard. We take what we do very serious, but when we're in that, sounds like you have just an ongoing
try.
Fun going on, yeah. And you know, keep it real. So, you know, I've got another question from Mike I'm going to actually pull in, but first I'd love to have you talk about, just kind of maybe step back on and talk about the digital journey you've been leading. And part of that is building digital acumen, the executive suite all the way through the organization. And so maybe just kind of speak to that, some of the benefits you're seeing from all that great work.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough when I was hired to come into Key now almost 13 years ago, that one of the charges was to say, help us become a more digital enterprise. And so when I stepped back after doing an assessment, yes, there were technological pieces that needed to be advanced for sure. And we built roadmaps for that. But I often say the technology piece is the easiest piece. Now, the engineers have to do really hard work. So I'm not minimizing that at all. But building, installing technologies sometimes is the easier piece of the puzzle. Getting teams to adopt those technologies, embrace those technologies, or even at the C-suite at the time, understanding the power of technology and how that could enable their business to be, you know, to generate more revenue, to improve the client experience, to really accelerate their strategies, I had to start with some basic acumen and digital acumen to try to get the executives to understand the potential, the art of the possible. You want them to be able to speak to how these technologies are advancing their business. And I reflect now after 13 years, when I first started, I would present to the board of directors at Key around our tech strategy, and I would talk about what we were doing and why we were doing it. Flash forward now, my peers, it's just woven into their business strategies and they talk about it. And I mean, it makes me smile that, okay, we haven't reached our pinnacle by any means. There's still a long way to go, but it is great to see. I think the next frontier for that is the data journey and the data acumen and really getting the company to understand the power of the data and how to use the data for better client experiences, you know, better employee experiences, everything we need to do. And then you add on the potential uses of generative AI, et cetera, all these other tools that you can kind of combine together. But we're now back to educating. What are large language models? What aren't they? Where might there be benefit? Where may we not have benefit? So I think it all goes back to my philosophy around technology is we exist to enable the enterprise strategy and our business strategy. And so constantly educating on how new technologies, emerging techniques can further accelerate those strategies. That's part of a CIO's job. That's part of all of our technical leaders like Mike and Keith and others. That's what they have to do every single day.
Well, I'm sure when you're working with your peers and so forth, you always lead with client. I mean, I've heard that many times already. And so you're speaking business language that they can relate to. You can connect the whole digital journey. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about the learning, you know, the value of being a learner, right? And so Mike had another great question I want to pull in, and it unpacks one of my favorite Amy-isms, which is, we've got to be the CEO of our own careers, right? Mm-hmm. It's something you say. So let's listen to this question from Mike.
Amy, in your career, you've seen quite a bit of change. It seems in the last 5 years, the pace of change has increased and continues to increase. You have created a culture of continuous learning at KeyBank branded being future ready. Why do you think it is important for everyone to be the CEO of their own career and to be a continuous learner? And what are you currently focused on in your own leadership growth?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question and one I am really passionate about. About 8 years ago, I happened to be at a tech conference and I was listening to another company and their journey around how they were how they had to change from one specific type of technology to another and what that meant to their people. And it dawned on me that I wasn't doing enough as a leader to future-proof our workforce and to help, whether you're a contact center agent or someone in back office operations in our payment processing division, or whether you were a COBOL engineer, all of us needed to think about where we wanted to take our careers and what was going to be available to us in 5-10 years. And I felt very responsible for creating those opportunities for our teammates. So we created a program at Key called Future Ready. And it was really a struggle at the beginning because I would say to my teams, okay, what skills do your people need in the future? Dead silence. You know, it's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
They're gonna do their jobs today. I can't think about that, right? But as we continue to push ourselves and as things evolved and we saw the pace of change picking up, it was pretty clear to us, we may not know everything that's going to happen and you can't predict everything, but you can see certain things that are going to change. So as an example, we could see we were going to need less mainframe engineers in the future. We still have mainframe engineers, but we're going to need less of them. So for that cohort of engineers, if someone was earlier in their career and wanted to prepare for their next role, how do we give them that time and capacity to learn a different technology? Because they have that ability, but most people just aren't given the time. So we gave everyone in my organization 10 hours a quarter for them to train. And the first couple of years, we got somewhat good feedback. And then they said, well, feedback was, that's great, but we don't have time to do it. So we went a step further and we blocked 2 hours on everyone's calendar so that it was no meetings, nothing was allowed to happen, but they could use it for their training. And we've seen a much better uptick in the types of training. So we have engineers becoming cloud certified, or we had engineers learning DevSecOps, or, you know, we have engineers who were learning robotics, or we had contact center agents who were going through our Tech Ready program, which was a 12-week boot camp, so that they could come out and be RPA engineers and really transforming their trajectory. But they had to choose to do it. So that's where it came down to being the CEO of your own career. No one can tell you what to do and make you do it. But if we can create the environment and allow the tools and some basic career pathing and saying, hey, these are jobs that we're going to see, we're going to need more of them in the future. You know, the new one is prompt engineering. How do we train people to become a prompt engineer? So we're noodling on that. Or, you know, so constantly trying to offer to our teammates the opportunity to expand and grow. And then it's also very empowering because you might want to say, I don't want to learn anything else but COBOL. I'm going to ride my career out here and I am going to be just fine. That's okay too. Right. So it really helps to empower the workforce and also for us to be able to have really honest conversations about where we see we're going to be investing for the future and what roles, whether they be in tech or ops or servicing, that we're going to see less need for and less demand so that we can give our teammates the time to prepare for that change. Can't do it 100% of the time, but I feel like we've created something that's now sustainable and it works and is enabling some pretty transformational growth of people's career journey And that makes me just very proud. The second part of Mike's question is, what am I personally learning? And I would say there's a couple of things. I'm really, really challenging myself to understand this Gen AI and large language models and how and where and why, and using, again, going back to my philosophy of, I've never been one to innovate for innovation's sake. It's leveraging technology to innovate for an outcome. So I'm really trying to push myself to learn those tools, those techniques, the engineering required behind it, so that we can figure out where we can apply these things to create value for the company. And then the second is data, and really pushing ourselves on data and data governance and data use and data quality and lineage. And it's hard. It's hard work. And we've got a great team of engineers and ultimately data scientists that use the data, but creating an environment and an ecosystem that makes it easy and produces high quality. So those would be the two areas right now I'm probably learning the most and pushing myself the most.
Yeah, it's the new Wild West for sure. And as you were answering the question, I was thinking back to what Henry Ford said. You know, if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses.
Right.
Right. And so what skills do you want in the future? Well, they don't know. Right. So I want every executive out there to really take that responsibility, right? That we need to kind of set the path and give the structure and the encouragement, the time. And then for those who are out there in the roles, it's like, you are the CEO of your own career. So I love that. Love that dual perspective.
You know, we had an opportunity last summer where we launched we had it out in our training curriculum for the enterprise, a basics of Gen AI kind of training. And I challenged my entire organization. We assigned the training to everyone. We didn't make it mandatory, but we made them know how to get access to it, made it easy. And I said, I challenge everybody to go out there and take the training, whether you were, you know, processing wires, doing default management, or whether you're an engineer. And by the end of the year, over 94% of our teammates had voluntarily taken the training.
Wow.
Voluntarily taken the training. And, you know, so people said, well, why'd you do that? Those people will never need that school tool. And I said, actually, they will, because the people in the operations units or the servicing units, they're the ones closest to the work. If they understand what RPA, AI, Gen AI can do, they will come up with, how do we innovate to make ourselves better? And it was just, that was another kind of just validation that what we're trying to do, the environment we're trying to create, can make a difference.
I've heard expression by many great leaders, you know, people aren't going to be replaced by AI. They're going to be replaced by humans who know AI.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah. So Amy, you know, I go to great extents to do detective work, and I like to find out what I can about people. And I've got some proof positive that you are an overperformer, even at a young age. Okay. Proof positive. And I know this makes you uncomfortable. You graduated high school early. And so you can confirm that for me. You got 3 varsity letters without playing a sport. And so I'm going to tee up a mystery question to help with this. And I'm not sure if you'll recognize this voice or not, but just check it out. Let's see what you think.
Hi, Amy. Could you take us back to when you graduated college? You apparently graduated when you were 20. How did that come to be? And what was your experience with your first work assignment? How did that go down when you first graduated and got your first assignment?
So that was Stan. That was my husband. And before I answer the question, I have to tell you, he's actually one of the absolute ingredients to my success. He has been the most avid cheerleader and person who has pushed me to achieve things that I never thought I could achieve. And so I thank him for that. And he, along with my daughters, are definitely, not to sound crazy, but the wind beneath my wings for sure, in what I do every day. I did graduate high school in 3 years. And then I went on to college And so I was young when I graduated. I graduated high school in 3 years because at the time my father was in the steel industry and he had gotten laid off. I was the youngest of three. And I just thought I need to be less of a burden on my family. And so I did that. And I auditioned at schools up and down the East Coast. And I went to the school that gave me the biggest scholarship. And so I went to scholarship for voice and double majored through school and graduated with honors out of college. And then I went right into banking. So my first assignment was at the time, and I feel so fortunate that NCNB at the time, which became Bank of America, was hiring a lot of liberal arts graduates. And their philosophy at the time was, hey, we can hire these general learners and teach them banking. And so I went through a really intense management training program and learned commercial lending, consumer lending, you know, learned because we had to learn it all, learned how to spread financial, did all of that and came out a baby banker, if you will. And I remember my first assignment was as an assistant branch manager at a branch, and all of my peers got assigned to be branch managers. And I was so disappointed. Like, what did I do? Did I fail? Was I not like I thought I was a really good, person in this training program? And little did I know that the person I was going to work for was not actually doing that well. And it was the largest branch at the time in Florida and Tampa. And within 6 months, he was no longer in the role, and I was promoted to lead the largest branch in Tampa, Florida. I was the youngest branch manager. I think I was, 21 years old at the time. So sometimes I guess the lesson I take back to that, and it happened throughout my career a lot, was I took assignments that didn't always feel great in the pit of my stomach. Like, why am I doing this? Wasn't conventional, wasn't what everybody else was getting. But it turns out if I look back, those were the most transformational and pivotal assignments in my career. So don't always think that your career has to be kind of linear and up a ladder. It zigzags and it can be a mosaic of things that come together over 30 something years.
I love that story. It's just, you were obviously the shining star in that class, but they couldn't tell you that. And you got not the choice role to start, right. But there was a plan, right? There was a plan there. It's so, so good.
You got to trust the process, they say, right?
Trust the process, yeah. Well, it was a pleasure talking with Stan. He's just everybody loves Stan, right? He's just a personality. He's just a character. He talked about your two rock star daughters. He just glowed, right, talking about your daughters. And he ended our conversation like this. He said, "I'm honored to be Amy Brady's husband." Thought that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. Great team. Great team.
Well, that honor is mutual, so.
Yeah, for sure. Another great part of your story, Amy, is your passion for giving back to the community. You do that in a lot of ways, a lot of things that people don't even know. I just learned something new earlier today in chatting. And so how many people do you think if we asked 1,000 people around the country, what's the largest performing arts center outside of New York City? How many people get it right?
Very few. Only those who live here in Cleveland.
That's right. That's right. Answer that question if you would. Tell us who it is and then just share your affiliation and where that passion came from for the arts.
So only those in Cleveland know that Playhouse Square is the largest theater district outside of New York City in the United States. And it has been an incredible honor to serve on that board for, goodness, over a decade. I was chair of the board for 4.5 years, and I currently still chair the nominating governance committee of the board. What makes that organization extremely unique is not only the dozen plus theaters that we have here at Cleveland that are historic and over 100 years old, but also the amount of real estate that we own. We own a hotel. We own an apartment complex. We just own so much of the district, and it's an incredible economic catalyst for our city. And so as a banker, I couldn't be more proud of the economic impact that Playhouse Square has on Northeast Ohio, in jobs, in tourism, and just general revenue it brings to downtown Cleveland. As an arts person through and through, you heard my voice major story. I mean, I've just been a believer in the arts. I'm a believer in the arts in education as well. And one of the things Playhouse Square does is provide programming to Cleveland public schools, and virtually far-reaching throughout Northeast Ohio, to schools that don't have arts programs anymore because of funding. And as someone who grew up at that being such a part of who I was and am, I just truly believe in the power of arts for students to develop critical thinking and a sense of community and belonging and a different way of learning. And so it's so multifaceted to me. I just am really, really privileged to serve on that board and will continue. And the last thing I would also tell you is that it was one of the ways we by visiting Playhouse Square and seeing a show, it was one of the ways we convinced our daughters that moving from Atlanta to Cleveland was going to be okay. We took them to see a show in the theaters and they're like, okay, this is pretty cool. So it's a gem.
It's beautiful too. I mean, I looked at online. It's like, what a beautiful place.
It's magnificent. The theaters are magnificent. So yeah. I would encourage people to come see a show at Playhouse Square.
Yeah. Forget Broadway. Go to Cleveland and, you know, all that talent's there and just amazing. What's your go-to, Amy, when you sing? Like if I put you on the spot now, which I'm not, but what do you do?
Oh, you know, unfortunately I don't sing as much as I used to. A whole range of things. I don't know. I love music.
Well, I've got another colleague, friend of yours, a great mystery question. So listen to this one here. And again, you'll know who this is right away.
Amy, congratulations. You have an illustrious career in banking and have risen to national prominence because of the work that you do and have an amazing reputation. Another key element of what defines you is the work that you do in the community. And this is something that, while I think many people know about you, they may not know the extent to which you're involved. You are heavily involved in nonprofit work, both in leadership positions and also on the front lines, helping to advocate and advance nonprofits' missions. Can you share with us a little bit about what drives your passion and excitement for this work? And also share some elements that you think people need to know that they can use to get involved in nonprofit work in the community as well.
Well, I recognize that voice. That was Dr. Jim Merlino. Mm-hmm. And ironically, Jim and I have now been friends for 13 years, along with his wife, Dr. Amy Merlino. But Jim and I met serving on a board of directors together for the Cleveland Leadership Center. And our friendship grew from there. So a side benefit of volunteering in the communities, you can develop some incredible lifelong friends. I have had the privilege of serving in a lot of non-for-profits over my career, and it has been a part of something that I feel just very responsible to do. One is a banker, because as a banker, and at Key, you know, we know that a part of our purpose is to help our clients and our communities thrive. And that comes in lots of different shapes and sizes and forms. But one is by volunteering in the community where you work, live, and play to make it a better community. And I just think that's a responsibility that those of us who work in our communities have. Secondly, it's been something that's been a part of my family. Stan and I raised our children that way. Stan and I used to volunteer years and years ago when we were first dating. And that's how Stan and I met. My husband and I met serving on a board of a non-for-profit. And there was a home for abused teenage children in Boca Raton. And that common purpose gave us something to build a friendship upon. And with our daughters, we would volunteer with them when they were little all the way through to when they were in high school. They continuously volunteered. And continue to do that today in their young adult lives, which makes me very proud. And makes me very proud. I think that for those who haven't been involved I think there's, and depends on where you are in your career journey. If you're early in your career, getting involved in an outside organization can give you an opportunity to develop skills that maybe you don't get in whatever assignment you're in at the very moment. So you might serve on a committee where you could learn financial skills, or you might serve on a committee where you get to be the leader of an event. So you're able to demonstrate leadership skills and learn leadership skills. So I found early in my career, it helped me develop contacts and networks, but it also helped me hone some skills, practice some things that I could then bring back to my work environment. So I think that is great for people young in their career. It's also not a bad thing to put on your resume to be able to say to your boss, hey, I'm doing all this and I'm doing this because I'm further developing myself. So I think that shows a lot of initiative for people younger in their career. As I've progressed in my career, I've really prioritized my volunteer time with, one, things that I'm passionate about, things that, you know, I don't begrudge going to a meeting. I want to get actively involved. I want to get my hands dirty. I want to be on the front lines. And, you know, my example there is we volunteer, I was on the board of the Achievement Centers for Children for 9 years. And every Saturday in the spring, my family and I, we would volunteer for adaptive football. And we'd go out and we'd play football with children of all ages and ranges of abilities as a family. And so it went from the boardroom of the Achievement Centers to volunteering for hands-on events. And I think that was important to us. It was important to the family. It was also important to the community. And I think second thing is aligning things that are with your current employer's vision, mission, purpose. If you can do that, that's terrific. So you may not always have an opportunity to do that, but if you can, that's terrific. So where Jim and I met with the Cleveland Leadership Center, we both served on the board there. That's a very important organization for Cleveland and one that I represented key and was able to bring not only my personal skills, but then the power of our company to that organization. And so, been very fortunate to be able to find those things that blend my skills where I can contribute my passions and then aligning to our work purpose as well.
Powerful. You know, all those benefits. Plus, you might even meet a spouse. You might meet great people like Jim. So thank you, Dr. Merlino, for helping us out here. He was really, really helpful and really excited about doing this. So glad he could do it. I've got one more mystery question for you, Amy. Again, kind of some of your outside activities where you've made some real big impacts on the community. So let's check out this last question.
I'm truly honored to be part of any discussion that features the remarkable Amy Brady. Amy's leadership shines through her unwavering commitment to uplifting those around her, her passion for advocacy for women in technology. Her impactful contributions to our Northeast Ohio CIO chapter have not only strengthened our community, but have left a lasting mark on Cleveland and beyond. I'm proud to support her and her mission to elevate the industry. Now, Amy, can you share a lesson you've learned the hard way that has significantly influenced your leadership journey?
That was Caroline. And talk about a woman with passion. She makes me look like I'm a laggard. She has energy for so much. And she just took on a new opportunity. So I'm very proud of her and I wish her all the best because she'll be a rock star no matter what she does. Boy, there's so many things along my career that I've learned the hard way. You know, times when I took roles that were not the most popular, or times where I got layered when I didn't think I should have been layered, you know, or times where maybe I was passionate about an investment we made and it didn't work and I had to kind of cut it down and say, okay, we got to stop. So there's so many I could go on. We could do a whole podcast on them. But I think the theme and what I see in people that differentiates is, and it may be an overused word, but it's resilience. It's how do you show up in the face of disappointment? How do you show up in the face of stress and crisis, right? And sometimes it's easier to show up in crisis when it's not caused by you, right? So because you have to take over the leadership and smile your way through it and keep calm and lead the troops. But when you know that you're part of the, you know, it's kind of hurt you a little bit, you know, you're a little, you know, your ego's a little bruised, or things didn't turn out the way you thought it was going to go, or the what you committed to, you didn't quite reach that goal that you had committed to. You have to own it. And then you have to move through it, right? So I just see people who can do that. And I'm constantly learning. It takes a lot of self-talk. I have a funny technique. I'll literally walk to the corner in the office and go, okay, you love your job. You love your job. You can do this. You know, just self-talk. And surrounding with yourself with people who can also lift you up is important. But really, it has to come from within and demonstrate that resilience, because there will be failures. There will be obstacles. There will be bumps. There will be disappointment. Every career is filled with them somewhere along the way. And I think the people who can be resilient, come in and say, okay, today's another day, are the ones that kind of progress through and then learn from it. Don't make the same mistake 5 times.
Yeah, that's so good. Thank you, Caroline Eberle. She's an energizer bunny extraordinaire. I get inspired by her every time I talk to her, and she is going to do amazing things in her new role. So, well, Amy, I want to put a big bow on this with, you know, we have this fun thing we do, the Tech for Good, right? The scholarship. And gosh, thanks to my team, we've committed over $400,000 in scholarships now, which it's just so outstanding. And so, you know, we do that by giving you the ability to gift a seat in our IT leadership program, TechLX. And so probably going to be hard for you because you're involved in so many great nonprofits. But does someone come to mind you'd like to recognize today?
Well, I would like to recognize the National Center for Women in IT, NCWIT. It's been an organization that I've been involved in and supported for many decades now. And they have a program called the Aspirations in Computing. And it's really a program that highlights and lifts up young women in high school across the country. And we happen to sponsor the awards here in Ohio, KeyBank does, and very proud of that work we've been doing. And just the work that NCWIT does to continue to build the pipeline and support women wanting to take on STEM-related roles. These are bright young women, and they've got such amazing futures, and we will all benefit from them and their success. And NCWIT is just right behind them. And I appreciate that.
Amazing. Thank you for that, Amy. They've been recognized before through the scholarship program. So a lot of people recognize the great work they're doing. I know you were on their board at one time, or, you know, years ago at Bank America. So, well, that's just fantastic. It just warms my heart. So, well, Amy, you know, I want to give you back your day. You've got a lot coming at you, and I just can't thank you enough. And I think folks can understand now why I titled this episode Empowering Teammates and Building Tomorrow's Digital Workforce, Amy Brady's Tech, Banking, and Community Leadership. And so I've learned a lot today, Amy. I can't thank you enough. And I see why you've been given all this responsibility, all this accountability for all these functions and grace and calm just comes out of you. I don't know how you do it, but you're so, so awesome. And again, no surprises why you were recognized as one of the best bankers, you know. It's just so, so inspiring. So thanks so much for taking the time, Amy.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, good stuff. And, you know, next week, make sure you check out CI.com, and I'm going to work with Amy. We're going to craft an article with her on her big answer the call moments. And you're going to hear about the moments where she pushed herself out of her comfort zone, took on these new functions. We talked a little bit about that. Took on new companies, new geographies, different boards, public, private, nonprofit. So just more nuggets of learning there. But until next time, I want to wish everyone well. And you might just want to go back and listen to this again. It's so good. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Tech Whispers, Inside the Playbook of the Best Digital Leaders, a Ouellette and Associates podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show, as this helps us connect the world's best digital leaders with those who aspire to learn, grow, and thrive in this amazing profession. Thanks for listening. Until next time.